Show to camera, John Ritchie, 94 WIP. This is a moment that we have long looked forward to. Ray Dininger on WIP after an Eagles Super Bowl to discuss it all. And, of course, Ray, as always, here at this time on Wednesday afternoons, and he's brought to us right now by Master Locators. Master Locators has immediate positions available for project and account managers, safety managers, and field technicians. Apply online at masterlocators.com. That's masterlocators.com. Ray, well, welcome to the show. We saw your emotion after the game on NBC Sports. Of course, seated next to Michael B. And of course, the Gov and Barrett and Seth. And your emotion, of course, with your son came out crystal clear. And, Ray, I got to tell you, I was very happy for a number of people around here. All of us. But we thought of you. There's no question. We heard you last week about what it would mean to you, your family, thinking of your parents and your grandparents. What was it like for you to watch the Eagles win the Super Bowl?
It was even better than I thought it was going to be. It's really funny. God, it's a long day. It's such a long day waiting for the game to begin. So I had all that time earlier in the day to think about it. And I was thinking about it a lot because I was thinking, how am I going to react?
Yep.
How am I going to handle this? Because we're live. And I was so sure they were going to win. I was so, by the time Sunday rolled around, I was so sure they were going to win that that's what I was thinking. I said, they're going to win this game. How am I going to handle that? And when it came, I thought for the first half hour or so, I handled it pretty good. I try to treat it like another game. I try to be the objective journalist. But when my son came, when my son finished breaking down his equipment with NFL Films, and then he went looking for our location and came walking on the set, that's when I kind of lost it. Because, and I was, as I was saying to you, I was a little embarrassed at first because my emotions were so raw mm-hmm. at the time, and I thought like I've never done this before, and I really feel like I'm kind of losing it at the wrong time, but. But the way people have reacted to it has been great. I mean, I've gotten so many emails and so many phone calls from people saying that was really a beautiful moment. And what they all said was, and I probably should have thought this myself, was everybody was doing that.
Yeah.
You know, everybody was watching. Nobody was watching this alone. I mean, everybody was watching it with a bunch of people, most of them family, people they loved and cared about.
Totally.
And when it happened, they all had that. And so it was okay. You know, yeah. Initially my thought was, oh God, I really blew it here. But it turned out that it was okay because it was totally in the moment, you know, and it was what everybody was feeling, and it was great. It was great. I mean, I was just coming in here to meet you, and as you know, I take public transit in here, and I mean, this is as miserable and gray a day as you could ever imagine. I mean, this is typical February in the Northeast, you know, gloomy, gray, sleet, snow, icy sidewalks. It's miserable outside, and yet everybody on the street, everybody on the subway today had a smile on their face. And total strangers just talking about, all they could talk about was this game. Because it's something they've waited for so long. And when it came, man, not only was it a great game for Philadelphia, but it was just a great game.
It was.
It was just a great game. And it's one that, no matter where you watched it, no matter who you were rooting for, it's a game people are going to talk about for years and years.
You know, you talk about your son coming up to the set. And we were just talking out in the hallway. Ray's son was the guy who actually videoed that dilly-dilly conversation or Philly-Philly conversation with Doug Peterson. He had Nick Foles mic'd up, and he was honing in on Nick for the whole game. And so he's the guy who captured that.
Wow.
For posterity purposes forever.
Yeah, that whole sideline conversation – that is now seen everywhere, and as I was saying to John, will be. I mean, that's going to be rerun forever.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the great moments in Super Bowl history. And I'm proud to say my son got it. My son was shooting. That was his assignment because he's been with NFL Films for many, many years as a cameraman. But that was his assignment that day. Was, you know, he got the Foles wire. The top, when the way things work with wirings at NFL Films is if a player is wired, you have two cameras assigned exclusively to him. And you just follow him all day, when he's on the field, when he's on the bench, whatever. And there's one top camera that's shooting down, and then there's one sideline camera where there's a guy following the guy up and down the sideline. So the result is you're never blocked. You know, if there's a good moment of audio, you never have to worry about him being blocked. You're either going to get it from the top or you're going to get it from the ground. So David had the top camera on Nick Foles, and so he saw what happened on the sidelines. And when I saw David when he came up to the booth and we were talking, he said, you know, Foles called that play.
Wow.
And I said, what do you mean? And he said he went over the sidelines, and he said to the coach, let's run wow. Philly special. So that was the first time I heard about it, and now – that video is out everywhere.
Yeah.
But I told David, I said, boy, you nailed that one. I mean, that's one that's going to go down in history.
Oh, there's no question. Ray, we're going to get to a lot of calls while you're in here. I know a lot of people want to talk to you. Let me just ask you this. The game, let's just get your analysis of what transpired and how your eye saw it. What is your analysis of what went down during that football game?
Just a great coaching job by Peterson. I mean, you can't say enough about what he did. Because he went after the one thing, and I think we even talked about this last Wednesday, was the way to beat the Patriots is you just have to attack them. You have to attack them, and you have to attack them, and you have to attack them. Give them the respect. You know, give them the respect that they've earned as one of the great teams of all time. But don't play in awe of them. Go out and play your game. You know, and we've seen teams go up against them in the playoffs and not do that. You know, and I mean, Jacksonville is a classic example.
Yep.
You know, they had the game won at halftime, and then all of a sudden realized, uh-oh, where are we? Who are we playing? And got out of their system, and then they wound up losing the game. The Eagles never did that, and one of the things I've really come to this conclusion after watching the Patriots for a long time, the way to beat them is to beat them this way, is to come in and just attack them. Because if you try and play within the structure of a conventional offense, in other words, if you play them by the book, you know, if you do all the conventional things and you try to play them by the book, you can't beat them because they know that book inside out. So the best way to beat them is to try and go outside the box a little bit. And to make them be defensive and have Belichick scratching his head saying, I wonder what they're going to do next. And throughout that game, I thought it was clear to me, especially on the offensive side of the ball, that Peterson was, I mean, he wasn't one step ahead of Belichick. He was two.
Right.
And that's why after the Patriots come back and bing, 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 they take the lead for the first time after the Gronkowski touchdown. I mean, you could kind of feel in the building, you could kind of feel that Eagles crowd. And believe me, it was an Eagles crowd. I mean, you could kind of feel them sag because they thought like, okay, this is it. The Patriots are coming back. They're going to win the game. And I never felt that. I felt the Eagles are going to get the ball and they're going to get on the score because the Patriots really hadn't stopped them all day. It was just a matter at that point. They had a playbook that was going to work. I mean, they had plays down there that they knew they could run and they would run successful. They just had to execute them. That was all. But at that point, I really felt like the Eagles are going to go down there and they're going to score and they're going to regain the lead. I just felt that. I felt complete confidence in that. And that really started with the coaches. It started with Peterson. It started with his game plan. And full credit to the players. They went out and made it work.
Did Bill Belichick cut off his nose despite his face with the Malcolm Butler benching?
I absolutely think so. I don't think there's much argument about that. I mean, because when you took him out, then there's a domino effect that goes through the whole secondary. You know, and now all of a sudden you got Patrick Chung's covering slot receivers. Mm-hmm. He's not equipped to do that. You know, and you got Eric Rowe. Now all of a sudden he moves up that he's now your number two corner, and he's not equipped to that. So, I mean, the Eagles got – I mean – they got, I thought that was a big thing, that the matchups, the way that dictated the matchups, the way that changed the matchups in the game, I thought was a huge factor in that. It really was.
Ray, we've talked about this week. You know, 60, I've seen the footage of the tackle Bednarik had on Jim Taylor end of game. There was other Eagles players coming in there to make, you know, in the area. Jim Taylor probably wasn't going to run those final 15 or so yards into the end zone. Was Brandon Graham's strip sack of Tom Brady with two and change to go the greatest defensive play, greatest in the standpoint of most important defensive play in the history of the Philadelphia Eagles franchise?
That's a good question. The Bednarik one was a great one because the ball's really inside the 8-yard line.
So it was inside the 10. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like he's barely in the red zone. I mean, when he got Taylor and rode him down to the ground, the ball was at the 8, actually inside the 8. So it was pretty close. But in that moment, yeah, it probably was.
Is Alshon's catch the greatest catch in Eagles history?
The greatest catch in Eagles history?
Yeah. I mean, for
In terms of impact.
TD impact and the degree of difficulty. I mean, that was a Lynn Swann kind of catch.
Sure was. Yeah. Sure was. I don't know. I guess you'd still have to maybe put Freddie Mitchell in there in that conversation.
Well,
yeah. I mean, as much as
they lose the next week.
As out, you know, of the, as out of the blue as you want to.
They lose the next
as
week.
Out of the blue as it was.
I forgot about Freddie.
But I mean, it's, you know, fourth to convert 4th and 26 is still pretty good.
I'm going Alshon over Freddie. I got to do it. They lost the next week. Let's go to the phones. I forgot. I think, by the way, Freddie, I don't know how many people saw it. Freddie popped into the halftime thing, you know, when during the thing.
Yeah, he was right up there next to Justin Timberlake.
It was Freddie on TV. All right, 888-729-9494. Jota Camera, John Ritchie, Ray Dittinger in the studio as well. Kim in Delaware joins us. Kim, hello. You're on 94 WIP.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes. Oh, well, we did, and then she dropped off. Kim, call back. We'll try to get you on. Let's talk to Scott in Barrington. Scott, you're on 94 WIP.
Ah, man, saying it ain't so, fellas. Say it is so.
This ain't
Brother
say Diddy. It ain't so. It is so.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Brother R. Diddy, Brother John, Brother Joe, you got to bear with me. I choked up on Channel 6, but I'm going to hold my emotions. That was for my boy Jay Ewing, who passed last year. We buried him in his McNabb jersey. And we draped his casket with an Eagles flag.
Wow.
That was for all the people who passed on, family, friends, media, R. Diddy, you, Merle Reese. The list can just go on, fellas. I'm still ecstatic. I'm going to turn back into the old Scott now. Man, what a game, fellas. What a game. I'm going to ask you, fellas, especially you, Mr. R. Diddy, what was your turning point in the game? And I'll give you mine, if I may.
What's yours, Scott?
When Zach Ertz caught that ball as a runner, juggled it, and boom, into that end zone. That, and I'm a cheat, and Corey Clement's fabulous catch, too. Those two right there was my turning point. So this is the answers. I'm just overwhelmed. I'm going back out and buy more Eagles gear. I can't stop until I drop.
Keep buying it.
God bless. Peace.
You got it, Scott. Get to the parade tomorrow. Ray, I don't know. I don't even know if I'd say there was a turning point in the game.
I don't know if it was a game where I could say there was a turning point.
Eagles played confident the whole way.
They did. Yeah, they did. I thought that the key element, to me, the essence of the game was that drive after the Patriots got the lead that the Eagles got it back and they went 14 plays, 75 yards, and went down and regained the lead.
Going for it on fourth,
you know, and it's a, I mean, it's only a two, if you look at the play-by-play, it's Foles to Ertz for 2 yards. I mean, it doesn't look like much. But if you go back and look at that play, and you and I were just talking about it, all the elements that were involved in that play, I mean, the fact that Foles even gets the ball off.
It's amazing.
It's one of the great 2 yard plays in NFL history. Because if you don't convert that and you give the ball back to Brady at that point, it's game, set, match. There's no doubt about that.
You're in your own territory, and that was one of the worst plays of the game for the left side of our O-line. I don't know what they were thinking, but you have a free hitter right in Nick Foles' face. And instead of rushing it, he sidesteps and delivers just cleanly, you know, takes the shot, I think. I mean, I was watching the ball at that point. I'm sure he took a shot. I mean, because it was Flowers.
Yeah, it was Flowers.
And, the conversion, just very – a lot of things had to go right, and they were all – on Nick Foles' part, because not everyone did their job on that play. So,
let me ask you guys, because I haven't heard you, so I don't know how you've come. During that interminable review of the Ertz play, which felt like
I was infuriated.
I mean, it felt like it went forever.
Yep.
What did you think the outcome was going to be?
I knew it was going to be a touchdown. Like, the fact that the Jesse James play happened, that's the only reason why it took as long as it did. Because I'm assuming, at the time, I'm thinking, well, they're trying to make sure there's enough differentiation available between the two plays. But the fact that he caught the ball cleanly, tucked it away, took 3 steps before diving, he was very clearly a ball carrier at that point. At which point, you only have to clear the plane of the goal line with the ball, and nothing after that matters. Like, there was no doubt in my mind. Well, I shouldn't say no doubt, because I was infuriated that it was taking so long, because then I started worrying that maybe they were going to take this thing back. And if they had, I knew that would have that was the wrong call.
Would have been the wrong call.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm totally aligned with John here. I mean, I was certain it should be a touchdown. I was not certain that it would be a touchdown.
Exactly where I was.
Yeah.
Because I watched it back and back, and I said, no, he's taken three steps here.
Yeah.
This is a touchdown. But then it was so long and so long and so long, and then I started to think they might overturn this.
There were two plays in that game where I thought, with the Brady fumble and with the Ertz touchdown, where I've been standing in the huddle wondering why it took so long.
Right.
And it didn't go my team's way against the Patriots.
Sure.
So that doubt did creep in there.
Well, let me throw this at you also, guys. And Joe DeCameron, John Ritchie, Ray Dittinger in studio. It's 94 WIP HD1 Philadelphia live from the Tasty Cake Studios. I got to tell you, I think the set of circumstances that happened down the stretch of this season and into the playoffs and the criticism catch, no catch may have dramatically helped the Eagles. And the reason I say that is this. I knew Zach Ertz caught that ball. There's no doubt about it. The Corey Clement one was a lot closer. Now, I think it should be a catch, but based on the way the NFL had called it at various points this year, because the ball did move a little bit, and that's the thing, like, to say that you have to catch a ball and it can't move at all, like it's a freeze frame, and the ball's not allowed to move, is unnatural. Of course, there's going to be some, I mean, the ball's going to move a millimeter. It just happens. All right. The NFL this year, at times, has ruled things like that not a catch, and of course, we were wondering, you know, are his feet down or not, and that was the other thing trying to figure out. And I really do think the commissioner saying what he said in the week leading up to the Super Bowl, that he wanted the rule cleaned up. I wonder if there was, if Commissioner Goodell kind of got into the head of the replay guy in New York a little preemptively, and the replay guy said, you know what, the commissioner's not happy with the way this is going to be, this has been going. We know naturally this looks like a catch. Let's call it a catch.
Right.
And I really wonder if that helped the Corey Clement one being called a catch.
I have no inside information on this. It's just my own reading of the situation and being somewhat aware of how things work on Park Avenue. I guarantee you that happened. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you that happened. That the last thing they wanted was to have this entire offseason caught up the way things were over. They didn't want to have Jesse James, too,
right,
be the only conversation to come out of this game for the whole offseason.
In the yeah. Super Bowl.
Because it would have right. all that would have led to was a long argument about how screwed up the NFL was. And so I really do think that there was some unanimity in which because Goodell's press conference, you're right, Goodell was asked at the press conference about the officiating, and even he admitted he didn't know what was a catch anymore
right.
and said that's the first thing that we have to talk about when the competition committee gets together, when we have the owners' meetings, we're going to have to resolve that. I mean, even he admitted that was as murky could be. And so the last thing they wanted was to have that kind of thing be the deciding factor in a Super Bowl. So I think there was no – I don't think anyone was given any explicit orders. But I think the idea was, listen – if it's close and it looks like a catch, let it stand yeah. as a catch.
And I think there was a discussion with Gene Steratore and the rest of that group of officials. Let's let these guys play. You know, if it looks like a catch, let's make it a catch. Because more than just those plays that we just talked about, I mean, they were getting handsy
yeah.
defensively, both sides of the ball, the whole game. And I loved it.
I did
now,
too.
It worked against the Eagles at times, but they were consistent with it. And for that reason, the way that game went down, I was really pleased with the officiating. And, of course, we won, so maybe there are people up in right. you know, New England that don't feel the same way.
Right.
But don't you feel like every play that felt like it looked a certain way ended up that way?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
the calls went the way they should have.
Yeah. No, I thought it was a well-officiated game. The only issue I had with Steratore, and maybe this is just me,
I know what you're going to say,
was when he patted Brady on the butt.
Yep.
I mean, that is so inappropriate. I mean, that is just, you can't do that. I mean, it just, you know, Brady, they have a conversation, and Brady turns to walk away, and Steratore pats him on the butt. You can't, if you're the referee in this game, you can't do that.
Yeah. I'm with you,
right. I guess he probably didn't know it was caught on camera. But when I saw that, I shook my head. Because I think Steratore is a good official. Mm-hmm. I generally think he works a good game. But that's just something you can't be doing.
I agree. Let's go to the phones, 888-729-9494. Dan, the Eagles are Super Bowl champs. How's that sound to you?
That sounds great. And for every non-Eagles fan across America, I need to be called champ for the rest of this year. But anyway, I got a question for y'all. If Nick Foles does not play another snap as a Philadelphia Eagles, does he go in the Eagles Hall of Fame? My opinion is without a question.
That's a really interesting question. It's a very high standard they have. That's a very it's an interesting question.
Even if he lost his Super Bowl, you still got to look at this kid's stats, and I mean he's broken records in for the Philadelphia Eagles. He's going down in the history books as, in my opinion, one of the better quarterbacks, and he hasn't even had that the longevity of the career as some of these guys have. However, also I want to say, I was real hard when they acquired Doug Peterson, the coach of this team. I was one of them guys that said, "What are you doing? This man is a leader, and you don't learn that throughout life. You're born with it. You're either a leader amongst men or you're not. You know what I mean?" And I'm buying what he's selling. You know what I mean? He can tell me the moon is purple, and I'm believing it because it came from Doug Peterson. You know,
it's incredible.
And I believe that he leads by example. You know what I mean? He really believes what he's putting out there, and he really lives that way. And, I mean, I'm stoked. I feel like there's been a passing of the torch. You know, everybody called Tom Brady Superman. Well, how about that green kryptonite? You know what I mean? Because we knocked the S off his chest on Sunday.
Dan, they got him, man. You're hitting it. And let me, Ray, let me bring you in here on this concept of Peterson, because obviously he was remarkably doubted. I got to tell you, Peterson and Charlie Manuel, they might literally be brothers. The parallel stories of doubt and ridicule, and I mean ridicule, mm-hmm. that Charlie Manuel dealt with and Doug Peterson dealt with, and they are the two coaches.
They deliver your championship.
Since Billy C. in 83, I'm not counting Raleigh, I'm not talking about the Soul, I'm talking about the Phils, Flyers, Sixers, and Eagles. I mean, do we not know that they might not have had the same parents, Doug Peterson, Charlie Manuel? They are brothers. It is amazing, Ray, how parallel the storylines are.
A lot of similarities. It really is. And, when the Eagles hired Doug 2 years ago, no other teams were knocking down the door to interview Doug Peterson, not even interview him, much less hire him. I mean, he wasn't on anybody's list. So when the Eagles hired him, I mean, I talked to a lot of people around the league, people I know, and they were calling me and saying, "What are they thinking? I mean, Doug Peterson, really?" I mean, there wasn't anybody that called up, and there wasn't anybody I talked to that said, "Hey, this guy's a really good coach. He's ready for this." Mm-hmm. There wasn't a single person that thought that. And so my take all along, and Lord knows we've taken a million phone calls about Doug Peterson, was always, "Let's give him a chance. You know, let's find out." I mean, I admit that. Do I have the same questions that everybody else has about his readiness? Sure, I do. But the problem I think that happened was people jumped to the immediate conclusion this is going to be a dismal failure. And you can't ever say that until you give a guy a chance to prove what he can do. I thought it was just an absolute joke that Doug Peterson didn't win Coach of the Year.
A total joke.
We all feel that way.
He gets one vote.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, he got fewer votes than Doug Marrone. And I don't say Doug Marrone didn't do a good job. He did. But if you look at everything that Peterson overcame, especially losing your quarterback and coming down the stretch, he was the head coach. He was the Coach of the Year, hands down.
Yeah.
Now, thankfully, he'll win at the Maxwell Club.
Yeah.
Dinner's coming up later on this month. And he will be awarded Coach of the Year by the Maxwell Club, which is nice. But, I mean, whatever Coach of the Year award was given out by whatever agency.
Yeah.
I mean, it had to be Doug Peterson.
Complete joke.
Know, he said in his press conference, "I just want to win. I don't care who gets the credit." Like, I actually believe that with him. And his playing career, I heard Mike Holmgren talking about Doug's playing career. And, Ray, you can probably illuminate us on this. Mike Holmgren said every year they would be looking for a guy to back up Brett Favre. And Doug was not first on their list. And everyone would say, "I want to play. Brett Favre's never going to go out of a game." You know, like, it's Brett Favre. He set the record for durability, and he's the greatest competitor out there. No, I don't want to come. And so at the end of, that courting process, Holmgren would call Doug Peterson, and Doug would be like, "Yeah, I'd love to be there." He'd go up there, and he would be like, Brett Favre's right-hand man, always positive, always just lifting the room, so to speak, that Brett was in. And, I mean, how similar is that to this? You know, he was doubted then as a player, never really got to achieve what he wanted to as a player. The fact that he was doubted here, and able to turn this thing around so fast. I mean, that's a departure from his experience, but the humbling process that brought him to this point, it only makes him a better leader of men. You know, when he says, I have to be me, I have to stay humble, no one doubts that he will.
Right.
It's just who he is.
It's amazing how confident, and not in an arrogant, obnoxious way, just that he is with himself. He is so. He appears to me to be so comfortable in his skin.
Yeah.
And that he exudes that to everyone at this point.
And he says, I expect it to win a Super Bowl. I didn't expect it to happen in year two.
Right.
This is a guy who's always believed in himself, in his ability. He says, I thought I could be a great coordinator in this league. You know, other people didn't think that about Doug.
Right.
You know, so it's, I mean, more power to him.
Well, and
it makes
I'm
me
with you.
That much happier for him.
I agree. Yeah. And I'll give you a little anecdote. You know, Ray brought up the Maxwell Awards, which, you know, coming up. And I don't know, John, in 2 years we've done the show, or a year and a half, if we even talked about this. But the high school Maxwell banquet 2 years ago was the day Doug Peterson got hired. And I remember I was emceeing the banquet, and the banquet was just about to start, and Jaws came in. And the Eagles brought in two outside voices for the interview process for all the coaches, Jaws and Bill Polian. And, of course, no one knew this, right? And so when and that came out right as the day that they announced Doug, and this always stuck with me, because Jaws is, of course, one of our revered, you know, athletes, and, you know, led the Eagles 80 and the whole thing. And he cares so much about the Eagles, as we know, to this day. I mean, there's no question. And it struck me because when that banquet was about to start, Jaws got up to the podium and he looked over at me and he said, I mean, literally, it's starting in 10 seconds. We don't have time to talk, but he looks at me and he says, Joe, I'm sorry. And I don't know what he's talking about. And it's like, all right, here we go. Joe DeCamera, MC the banquet. And I get up to MC the banquet and I got this, like, he's sorry lingering in my head, but we can't talk. It's banquet time. Do the banquet. As soon as the banquet ends, he looks at me again, and now we come together and we can talk. This is like 2 hours later. He goes, hey, I'm sorry. And I thought he was saying, I'm sorry for, like, well, you're probably bummed that Doug Peterson's the head coach. And I go, well, you know, it is what it is. I don't know, blah, 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 blah. And he goes, sorry, I couldn't tell you I was involved in this coaching search. And I was like, okay, well, you don't have to apologize to me. It's kind of you to say it, but, you know, no problem. And he goes, we got the right guy. And I go, you sure? He goes, Joe, we got the right guy. And I said, okay. And the way Jaws delivered that message to me, that he was so confident that the Eagles had landed the right coach. Look, I doubted it thereafter, but he believed it.
Yeah. It's funny. I remember the only thing I knew about Doug, well, I covered the game that he won here for Shula when Shula broke the record. So I knew him from that. But when I was at NFL Films, I used to have to go through a lot of wirings, and we wired Brett Favre. God, we wired Brett Favre all the time. And I went through a number of his wires. And on the sideline dynamic with the Packers at that time was there that Brett, when he came off the field, was always flanked by two people. He was flanked by Andy on one side, and he had Doug on the other side. And they both had a function. Andy's function was to hold off Mike Holmgren, who was usually walking over wanting to choke Brett Favre for something he had just done. So Andy's role was to fend off Holmgren while Doug could talk strategy with him.
Wow.
And I can't tell you how many times I saw Doug say to him, hey, listen, when you get up the line of scrimmage, don't rush it. Don't rush it, because the outside linebacker there, he's going to start walking up. And when he starts walking up, you know it's a blitz. If you go too fast, you're not going to know it's coming. If you wait, they're going to tell you what they're doing. And all things like that, I mean, he saw the field so clearly, and he so fully understood his role of being Brett's other set of eyes, that one of the things that Brett said after he came and spoke to the team on Saturday, I guess it was.
Yes, Saturday.
Was, listen, you know, I don't think I couldn't have been a three-time MVP if I didn't have what he was given me in terms of what he could see. So it was. I can't tell you how funny that was to see Holmgren coming over with his eyes bulging out, like his hands, he's ready to grab it, and Andy saying, no, it's okay. Meanwhile, Doug's over here telling him what he saw. Hey, listen, it worked.
That's incredible.
Ray Dittinger, awesome. John Ritchie, Joe DeCamera, 888-729-9494. Time's yours at 1:45. It's an amazing Wednesday afternoon on 94 WIP.
Have you tried to impress your special someone on Valentine's Day and totally missed the mark? Now you want to get it right this year, and that starts with ProFlowers and Sherry's Berries. Pro Flowers and Sherry's Berries have teamed up to help you really impress your Valentine this year with their perfectly paired collection. Go ahead and think inside the box this Valentine's Day. Perfectly paired is two gifts in one. It's a one-of-a-kind Valentine's Day gift that will really impress. Today only, get one dozen gorgeous red roses and dipped gourmet berries together in a beautiful, specially designed gift box for just $49.99. This uniquely designed box will keep your berries cold and your flowers fresh, guaranteed. Visit berries.com today to get one dozen red roses with dipped gourmet strawberries for just $49.99. That's berries.com. This offer is only valid today, and Valentine's will be here before you know it, so don't wait to check out Perfectly Paired and think inside the box.